Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. I'm still waiting for my guest to join me. It's been some nasty weather here in the southeast. And what we're going to talk about, hopefully she'll be able to dial in, is the state of rural medicine in our country right now. There's been a significant impact on the care of rural citizens from the closing of hospitals, hundreds of hospitals, if not thousands at this point, all across the country since the Affordable Care Act passed, to the fact that there's very little access to family practice, specialists, et cetera. And our rural citizens are really in the position where they have to travel sometimes hundreds of miles in order to get in to see a doctor. And as anybody can tell you, the longer you wait to get care, the more extreme your medical condition can become. And that's not where our healthcare system is designed to be. And all of the movement towards consolidation and everybody being told that robotics and, you know, we're on the cutting edge, that all pales in comparison when you think about the everyday real world things that are an issue. I know that we are trying to get our caller on, and if you can just go to break, Dave, hopefully I can get her into the call. So I'm going to take a short break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. It's the joy of live radio. I wanted to definitely have a break so that I can get Dr. Lisa Norberg on, because she is, you know, a doctor on the front line who can speak to with authority what's going on in the rural side of our healthcare system. Now, before we took the break, Dr. Norberg, and I was waiting for you to come on, I was giving the listeners a preview of exactly what's going on the front line of medicine. Everybody thinks it's big city and, you know, technology driven and everything's great and Obamacare's awesome. But there is a part of the healthcare system that's never talked about that really is a majority of the people in our country who have to deal with a system that's it's not really accessible. It is not providing the type of care that patients need. And the doctors who practice in these areas are really just, you know, your voices have been silenced. So I wanted to give people a real flavor for exactly what's going on, the real side of medicine, not what they want you to believe. So I know it's kind of a rushed interview or a rushed introduction, but if you can let us know what exactly, what brought you to rural medicine? What's your practice like?
Well, absolutely. I would be happy to address that, and thank you so much for having me on the show, and I want to apologize for all the technical difficulty that we had this morning.
No, it's not your fault. It's quite all right.
This would probably be a very good time to talk about computerized records and the electronic health system in an emergency situation, because unfortunately this is a lot of times what we deal with when we're dealing with an emergency and forced to deal with computers. But yes, I am a family practice physician, and I graduated from residency in 2002 and then went into private practice in a large hospital. We were two-physician practice, but we were in the setting of a large hospital in the Kansas City metro. And then I left there and went to Washington State and was in a practice with several other physicians in the suburb of Seattle. And then in the process of all of that, I had two children, and then I was having my third. And at that point, I decided that the best fit for my family would be to start my own practice. And so I came back to Northwest Missouri, which is where I'm from, and one of my brothers was already in practice. I have two who are physicians, and they were both in practice, but One had set up a practice, and we decided to both have our own corporations, but to be in the same office and to share overhead. And so we were essentially solo practitioners, but we shared overhead and covered for patients when one of us was gone. So the setting that I was in at that point was about 70,000 people. However, we were surrounded by rural communities. And so we provided access to a lot of the rural communities that were on the outskirts of our city. So what happened was we were doing fine and had no problem at all, really, with our practice. And we were doing well taking care of our patients. But what happened when Obamacare passed was premiums went up immediately and deductibles went up immediately. And I think the insurances were just preparing for the onslaught of patients that were going to be coming on, and they just raised the premiums and raised the deductibles. So what happened was my practice dropped from seeing maybe 25 to 35 a day down to seeing about 12 to 15 a day. And the reason why was because people simply couldn't afford their deductibles and they could not afford their premiums, and so they could not afford to come to the doctor. And so at the time I started working in rural communities and ERs to support my practice and to try to keep my practice afloat. But after a while it became an issue where I needed to choose one or the other. I either needed to go to rural communities and work in the ERs, or I needed to try to do something different, perhaps sell my practice to a larger corporation or something such as that. But that's how I got into rural medicine.
Well, it sounds like exactly very similar to what happened in my practice when the Affordable Care Act passed. We were in the same position, and I actually had to do contract work as well. So I completely understand exactly where you're coming from. You know, when the people, I mean, you have practice, your patients were enmeshed in your practice, you have a relationship with your patients. What did that feel like for you to have a thriving practice, to have it snatched away, to not be able to be an advocate for your patients? How did that affect you personally?
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting that you mention that right now, because this is very timely, because last night, my family and I were actually on vacation right now. We flew to Florida. And how often do you get on a plane and you don't know anybody? And last night, there was a gentleman on the plane, and I closed my practice in 2012. And there was a gentleman on the plane, and his wife was very sick, and she was one of my patients for many years, from the time that I started until I had to close my practice. And when I saw him, of course, I recognized him. He recognized me, but his wife passed away last year. And so when we got to the baggage claim and had a chance to talk, of course, we, you know, gave each other a big hug. And he told me how much he had missed me, and his wife had missed me when I had to leave, and that mm-hmm. she passed away, and that it had taken several years for her to find somebody to take care of her. And actually, she ended up seeing a pediatrician who was in solo practice, which was kind of interesting. And I'll tell you, the guilt that I felt at that time when I was talking to him, I just felt so responsible and so guilty. And I apologized to him, and I told him I was so sorry that I just didn't see another way at the time. And he said he completely understood. But yeah, it definitely takes a toll. And I will tell you that my patients cried when I left. I cried when I left. These were people mm-hmm. that I had known. A lot of these people I had known since I was a child. And mm-hmm. A lot of them I had told that, you know, I had diagnosed them with cancer, and maybe some of them they didn't want a lot of treatment, but I had promised them that I would be with them. You know, I would walk through the journey with them, and eventually I just had to look them in the eye and tell them I was so sorry, but I just could not. I just did not have a way forward. So definitely it affected me personally.
I'm going to ask the same question a different way, because for someone who's not a doctor, they would, you know, the devil's advocate side of it would say, well, why didn't you just play the game? Why didn't you just sell your practice to a corporate hospital? Why didn't you just, you know, join a bigger group? What is the reason that you decided that you couldn't do that?
Well, for one reason, there was nobody buying. I had actually considered that, but I did not. I had actually considered approaching some of the area hospitals, but in our city, there is one mm-hmm. hospital, and that hospital is not particularly friendly to independent physicians, and mm-hmm. So it just wasn't an option at the time. And I would have loved to explore that option. It just wasn't an option at the time. And the other thing too is, when you do that, you give up the autonomy to be able to take care of your patients in the way that you see fit. You have quotas to meet. You have productivity goals that you have to meet in order to be paid a certain amount. And mm-hmm. I don't want to practice medicine that way. I want to take care of the patient.
That's my whole goal, too. I mean, that's a non-starter for doctors who enjoy the personal touch, who, you know,
Absolutely.
You knew that patient and you had a relationship. I'm not sure that doctors who are in the corporate setting have the ability to have deep relationships where they actually cry if they're losing a patient. I'm not sure that that's an option with those guys, because they're just get them in, get them out. I mean, I've done some locum tenens work, which is that contract work, and seeing 25 patients a day that you didn't know because you're just there, and you're just...
Right.
At first, I got out there at 9 o'clock at night because I was actually practicing in, you know, private practice medicine. By the end of my rotation there, after about 3 weeks of it, I had to play the game like everybody else, you know, get to the point, you know, not really talk to the patient. It was really devastating. I had PTSD by the time I finished that rotation, because it was
absolutely
so anti to who I am. And imagine having to do that every day for the rest of your career. I can't even imagine that.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think part of medicine is, sure, the diagnosis, and it's the diagnosing, it's the appropriately treating, it's the looking up disease processes and being sure that you're doing it appropriately. But there's mm-hmm. another huge part of medicine that goes back to relationships and goes back to ministry, honestly.
Yeah.
And there are times when you can't offer necessarily the perfect treatment for somebody because perhaps it's just not available yet, but you can at least be kind. You can at mm-hmm. least walk through the process with the patient. And I think that that's something that is lacking in this environment that we find ourselves in, is it's algorithms, it's checklists, it's who meets these criteria in order for the insurance company to pay this or that or the other thing. And yet the personal touch of medicine has nothing to do with evidence-based medicine, or has nothing to do with checklists or things such as that. And I think we lose that in big, huge corporate settings that are insurance-driven, mm-hmm. for sure.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. And I just have this feeling that the doctor and the patient have both been monetized. You know, we're the whole purpose of healthcare. And what they did to the patients first with the high deductibles, high premiums, high out-of-pocket, and they did it to us with maintenance and certification, evidence-based medicine, algorithms, you know, this value-based medicine. And I'm not sure that you don't have to practice that way at this point, right? Do you take any Medicaid or Medicare?
Well, at this point, I am strictly, I work for a company called, well, I work for a wonderful company, and I don't have to say the name, but it's a wonderful company that's based in my region that sends doctors. Their whole purpose is to send doctors to rural communities. And so I actually work in rural communities all the time, and I'm paid by the hour. And so, no, I am not forced to do that. And in fact, I love my company because they are very focused on just taking care of the patient, do the right thing for the patient, do the right thing for the client, just very service-driven, and I really appreciate that about them.
Well, that's unusual, because most of the corporate settings are the opposite. It's volume, it's documentation, just like you described, and it's somebody watching over your shoulder to make sure you dot every I and cross every T. And it's not always about getting them to the right specialist or the right, you know, out-of-office follow-up. just by the book. So that's a brilliant thing that you actually found someone like that.
Well, it's not actually it's not a large corporation. It's actually a very small corporation that that is local based, and so it's not a large corporation. It's not profit driven. So that's a big component. And then the other thing is they deal almost exclusively with community access hospitals. So these hospitals are very small, and so that's the difference between working with a large corporation and working with some of these smaller community access hospitals.
Yeah, I didn't even realize there were very many of those left. I mean, I thought that in Georgia they've basically shut down pretty much every community and rural hospital, and people are traveling hundreds of miles in some instances just to get an ER. You know, the story of a patient who had a heart attack, and he literally, I think he passed away before he got to the hospital because it took so long to get there. I mean, it's just, people don't see that side of it. And I know that you really are in a unique position, but before you linked up with this position, did you find that when you had to send a patient, if you did, to an ER, that they didn't really have everything that they should, like they didn't have the complement of specialists or who you needed, sometimes GYN, ENT, neurosurgery. Did you have that issue where it wasn't full coverage?
Well, where I was, we were fairly well covered. The hospital, the local hospital where we were, where we could send our patients to was fairly well covered. So I was fortunate in that aspect. Now, it may take a while to get in to see the specialist longer than I would like, and sometimes I would have to send them an hour away when there was a hospital just a few minutes down the road. So there was definitely that component of just being, everybody was overwhelmed, and there weren't enough specialists to go around. So I would say that there was definitely that component, especially in things like rheumatology or neurosurgery or things like that. Yeah, definitely there was that component where it was difficult to get them in.
So at this point now, how many patients do you have to see a day?
Well, I work ER in rural communities, so we see whoever comes in. And in a rural community, it can be feast or famine. And so I may have as few as 4 or 5 that come in my shift, and I may have as many as 30 or 35. And you just never know. And it kind of, a lot of times it depends on the weather, and sometimes when it's nicer, you have some farm accidents, or you have some ATV accidents or some different things like that. But we see the full scope of everything. We see everything from, you know, a simple toothache to a trauma where somebody has fractured their neck or fractured their back or, you know, heart attacks or strokes. We see it all. So, yeah, it just kind of depends on the day in the rural ERs.
I got you. And so once you have stabilized the patient, and what's their follow-up like? Do they have, primary care doctors in the community that they can seek treatment from? Because ER is, you know, you're pretty much an extremist. But what about standard things? How is their access in that regard?
Oh, you know, we almost always have to send them an hour away to the city to have any type of specialist follow-up. In fact, there are times when I've been in a rural community that was a couple of hours away from Kansas City, which is the nearest closest large city. And there have been times when I've been concerned about blood clots in legs that we didn't even have access to an ultrasound. And so, I would just have to do my best clinical diagnosis and or perhaps even like if I needed a CAT scan, if somebody I thought was having a stroke and they needed a CAT scan, the CT tech might live 30 minutes away. And so by the time they come in, they get the CT scanner warmed up. There's definitely not that access that patients need in the rural communities. So it's difficult from that standpoint. It's really in a lot of situations practicing frontier medicine.
I see.
But the flip side is the patients really appreciate the fact that you're there. They really appreciate, because if you're not there as a physician, then they don't have any access to care. So they really appreciate us being there, which is nice. It's actually very nice.
Well, I'm sure that's the real empathy, the real art of medicine that gets practiced in that situation.
Absolutely.
On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings at 9 o'clock for Medicine on Call. On Medicine on Call, we talk about more than medicine. It's about how to take control of your mind, body, and spirit.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call. And I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. I'm speaking with Dr. Lisa Norberg, a family practice physician who practices medicine in a more rural setting and works out of emergency rooms, or emergency room, I should say, because it's only one people come to where you are, am I correct?
Yes, I work in several different communities, so there are several ERs, but they come to where I am.
Now, you know, you said something before the break that really pique my curiosity. The access, the equipment in the hospitals that you're working out of, I mean, you know, I've always thought that Obamacare would lead to a two-tier level of healthcare delivery, where you'd have the haves and the have-nots, et cetera. To not have, I mean, it's bad enough that you may not have, you know, on-call, on-the-spot, you know, specialists, but you mentioned that the CT tech may not be there. They don't have to stay in-house in case. I mean, that just seemed like
right.
It's kind of interesting. Is that unusual?
No, not at all. Not in the rural communities. I don't think it's unusual at all. And, you know, really, in those cases, I think they consider themselves fortunate to have CT techs. It's difficult for rural communities to recruit and to get the ancillary care, to get the people that they need there to work. And so a lot of times you'll have agency nurses or you'll have agency CT techs or ultrasound techs or different things. And so I think they just feel very fortunate to have what they have, and which is
right.
A different mentality, honestly.
Oh, it certainly is. I mean, on the city side, the hospital that I used to work out of, the whole place is torn down. They're building a new section. I mean, it's just amazing amount of money that flows through that.
Right.
You know, 25 flat screen TVs in the OR. It was just overkill. But it didn't make it better. It didn't make it more efficient. The people who really were good and you enjoyed working with, one by one left because they were just inundated and put upon. So the system somehow it's broken. And I don't believe that the Affordable Care Act is caused anything to improve. Are these folks on insurance or like Obamacare? Are they really self-pay people that you're mostly seeing in the ER? Because, I mean, the argument was we have everybody covered now, so it's a good thing.
Well, coverage and care are two different things. A lot of the rural hospitals write off a lot of the visits that are seen because patients can't afford to pay them. And as far as the ratio of who's on insurance and who is self-pay, to be honest with you, I really try not to get into that side of medicine. I just want to take care of the patient. And so
gotcha.
I don't know when somebody comes in whether they're covered or they're not, I just, you know, try to do my best regardless of who they are. And so, but what I hear from some of the different ones is that there are a lot of uninsured patients, because coverage might be available, but if you cannot afford the premium every month, then coverage really isn't available. Or maybe they don't even know how to look for the subsidy. Or, I mean, you have a lot of patients who are just not very, they just don't really know how to navigate the system, and so they just go without. Mm-hmm. And so, and coverage, you know, like I said, coverage and care are just two different things. And to me, it's just laughable to say that we have all of these people covered whenever mm-hmm. you talk to anybody on the street and they can't afford to go to the doctor anymore because of the cost. And yet doctors don't have the ability to offer cost for less care because it's illegal. It's considered Medicare fraud. So, it's frustrating for sure.
What you just said, I want to repeat that because I've said it on the show before, but I'm sure people are like, oh, that can't be the case. But if you underbill somebody, if you don't charge them what your coding says that you're supposed to charge them, that's considered to be fraud, and they'll come after you.
Yes.
That doesn't even make sense. You're trying to give a discount. You're trying to get free care, and you're a criminal. It's a no-win situation,
right.
Really.
And it is.
It only hurts patients overall.
Well, it's a situation that sets the government up to be the hero. It's a situation that was set up even before before the Affordable Care Act, that, you know, 20, 25 years ago, I remember, maybe even about, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, I'm not exactly sure when it came into being, but, you know, when you tie the hands of doctors and don't allow them to see patients for a negotiated fee or for less than what they will code, then mm-hmm. all of a sudden, what's going to happen, except that people are not going to have access whenever they can't afford it. And so all of a sudden, the government's the hero and they come in and give everybody coverage. And so I don't think that this plan has been just the past 8 years or 10 years. I think that this has been in the works for a very, very long time.
Oh, I'd agree with you on that one. And it started when the insurance companies started paying for the first dollar of care, you know, before
absolutely.
It was big ticket items. That's, to me, the dividing line between the old-fashioned practice of medicine, where you had a Dr. Welby approach to it. You know, you gave people free care. You went to their homes because you could afford to do it. You know, it became...
Yeah.
Can I stay open or can I see a patient? That was the decision that doctors were forced to make. And,
right.
you know, we have to take responsibility for our profession as well. You and I did
sure.
because we weren't in it at the time. But those doctors
right.
who said, oh, I'll take whatever the insurance gives me, it's going to be free money, the patient won't have to pay out of pocket. That mindset of taking the patient out of personal responsibility, having a third party be the arbiter, is a bad choice. Because it's all gravy when they're paying you, but at some point they're going to be looking out for themselves, and they make money when you don't use the service and you collect the premium. That's
right.
or pay less for the service. That's how they make money. So it's just a matter of time before they
right.
started to ratchet down.
Right, and I think we have to be very careful because. But moving forward, I think we need to be very, very careful because I think the mentality was, you know, in the 60s when Medicare was enacted and then mm-hmm. all through the line, I think the mentality has always been, well, it can't be worse, so we might as well pass it. It can't be worse, so we might as well pass it. Well, you know, we thought that there were a lot of doctors screaming and saying, do not pass the Affordable Care Act. This is going to be
yeah.
very bad for patient care. So there were a lot of doctors that were saying that. But there were also people who were saying, well, it can't be worse than what we have. At least they're doing something. Well, and then here we go. And then the payment by the SGR, we said, well, you know, it can't be worse than what they've got. And then now we've got MACRA. And so I think we just need to be very, very careful going forward that we don't do a knee-jerk reaction and say, well, it can't be worse than what we've got, because honestly, you know, it can. And we have to just be very careful about that.
Oh, it absolutely can. It can be single payer. Medicare
Absolutely.
For all is what they're trying to tout. It's not even Medicare
right.
for all. It'll be Medicaid for all if you really want
yeah.
to be honest about it. And that
yes.
system, when I did take it, it was the most restrictive system.
Oh, yeah.
None of the medicines I ever wanted to give my patient was covered under formulary. You know, nothing
right.
that you ever wanted to do would be covered, or you'd have to
yes.
wait forever. Or
yeah.
you did it, and then you never got paid for it. It's just a really bad system. And
yeah.
People better beware of that. They talk about Canada and the UK about how we should strive for that, but they're not having a party over there either, and they don't
no,
talk about
all.
That very often. They're being priced uh-huh. out. Their access stinks.
Yeah.
The only good thing about theirs is that their medication is a little cheaper than ours because we're subsidizing them.
Exactly, exactly. Well, when I was in Washington, I was 2 hours south of the Canadian border, and I had Canadian patients who would come as my patients, mm-hmm. and then they would go back and they would get their medicines in Canada. So, no, absolutely, it's not better access there. And they will tell you that they come to the, well, at the time they came to the U.S., and now I don't know where they go. Maybe they still come here. I don't know. So
mm-hmm. they still might, though, because being able to get a CT, being able to get, a surgery in a timely way that's elective, they actually still
right.
do it. I used to work out of Maine, and uh-huh. they would come across the border to get CTs and such from Bangor. So this is, you know, it's about access, and
Absolutely.
it's about value for what you're getting. You may be paying a subsidized rate, but is it worth it when you can't get to see the doctor that you want, that you have whatever service you want denied because it's not medically necessary? Are you really getting what you're paying for? And I don't think that's the case, because I've been blocked. I used to take Obamacare for the patients that had it, and we got dinged multiple times. The patient was left holding the bag, you know, being responsible for the bill, after it was said that, oh, it's pre-certified, you can do it. I said,
right.
there's no way I'm going to put a patient in that situation. So I see the writing on the wall, and what really makes me, I'm not upset anymore about anything, because it's not, God is in control, but
Absolutely.
What's
yep.
disconcerting is that there's the statement that having health insurance equals access to quality care. It's people who aren't physicians superimposing their theories and their wants and needs on the doctor and the patient.
Right.
And whatever we say is, you know, it's we're the bad people, we're racist, we're sexist, we want people to die. That's the thing that just drives me nuts, because it's the actual,
Absolutely.
It's the opposite. There's
right.
nobody who has more of an interest in the patient getting better than the doctor and the patient. Not a politician.
Absolutely.
Not an insurance person. Why do they get to have so much power in the system?
Right. Well, I think that we need to, this is something that I am really trying to get the message out to, and I just feel like sometimes I just feel like I'm screaming at the top of my lungs and no one's listening, but the message that I'm trying to get across is, the message that the media would like to have people believe is that liberals want health care for everybody and conservatives don't. And that is a
yeah.
lie. That's a lie from the pit to hell. I mean, and it's a lie that's meant to divide us and to destroy us. And the reality is, conservatives, I have never met one doctor, conservative, liberal, libertarian, Tea Party, no leaning whatsoever, who does not want health care access for every single patient in this country. Every doctor wants health care access for every single patient. And I think the reason why we have so much frustration is because we're saying Obamacare may have benefited some people who perhaps had pre-existing conditions or something like that. But mm-hmm. on the flip side, there are a whole lot of other people who have had disastrous results from Obamacare. And so I think that that's just a message that I want to get out too, is that every doctor wants health care for everybody. So, but the best way to do it is to get the government out of it and to let doctors take care of their patients.
Absolutely. You just said the magic words. Let government, get government out of the patient room and have the doctor and patient work together. I mean, I think to me it's the way I like to distill it is, does the power of the purse lie with the patient or with a third party? Because whoever has the money, who has the power of the purse, has the power in this situation. And we've been, doctors and patients have been, you know, taken out of the situation. We don't have the power. You have a government giving a subsidy who can snatch it back the next year if you make more money. So it's not even a gift. It's a tax, essentially. And do you really want that? Do you really want the government to decide, you know, well, you lived a good life. You know, you have a medical condition that's very costly. There's only a small percentage of people who are going to benefit. So the good of the many outweighs the needs of the few, so we're not going to cover this. But suppose you're a nice, healthy, active 75-year-old who has more to, you know, offer. No one could put value on anybody, but I'm just saying that they're lively, they're thriving. Who's to say that they don't deserve to have whatever treatment that they want? I mean, who are you to say? You never know. And the people who get to decide that really don't have a dog in the hunt, you know, in terms of patient care. It's all numbers.
Well, exactly. And the other thing, too, is when you're paying your premiums, for instance, my premiums this year, we actually went with a health-sharing ministry, but my premiums for my family this year were going to be $2,000 a month. And we don't really have a lot of health problems. And then our deductible was going to be somewhere around $6,500. Well, when you look at that, so I'm paying $2,000, and then any medical care that I need or that my family needs, I'm paying for that too. So I'm not getting any benefit whatsoever from having health insurance, and so that money is going to administrators and possibly other medical needs, but those bills are negotiated so far down that, I mean, there are stockholders in the insurance companies that are benefiting. There are administrators. A lot of the administrators of insurance companies get stock options. So there is a lot of just stuff that I just really see is not ethical. And
agreed.
We're not really paying for access to health care. We are paying for a lot of administration that really needs to go out the window.
You said the magic words again. It's a conflict of interest. You know, it's in their interest to keep the money in the pot. It's not a car insurance. It's not a life insurance. Every time they keep more of the money that they should be giving for patient care, somebody gets denied something. Somebody is not getting the quality of care that they deserve. That's immoral and unethical. And then you add in pharmacy benefit management companies and all that collusion that goes on with what's on formulary this month, you know, and these discounts that they give each other. And then you've got the pharmacy brand, you know, the chains who link in with the insurance company. So that's the preferred pharmacy. It's a cartel. I don't think you can call it anything else. And we're driving it.
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah.
So if you had could set up the system any way you wanted, what would be the things that you think we need to unhook us as doctors and patients from this type of system to improve it?
Well, excuse me. I think that there are several things, and I always want to be careful. There's a lot that's wrong right now, but I think it can just weigh us down and bog us down, and I think I need to be careful to express that there's also a lot of hope. There are things that we can do outside of the system, especially for patients who are really struggling right now to just get their health care needs met. One of the things that I would encourage people to do, especially if you have a high deductible or you are finding yourself paying for medicine out of pocket, is there are some apps that you can get on your phone, or you can call around the pharmacies and find the cheapest out of pocket price. There are some other things that are not, such as health sharing ministries, and you can Google health sharing ministries and see if maybe you might qualify for one of those. And those are a much cheaper alternative to insurance, and they're still covered where you do not have to pay the fine every year. And there are also direct pay
physicians that actually list their prices for an office visit or prices for, say, a mole removal or a wart removal or different things. And you can actually find physicians where you don't even have to go through insurance. And you might find that you're paying a much cheaper price for a visit than even if you went through your insurance. So those are things that we have access to right now. And if I were to say what would give us hope, it would be moving more toward that type of an environment where there's perhaps a large catastrophic insurance for a very low premium, but the rest right. of medical care is taken care of by patients. And if we want to do a health savings account that's tax deductible, then I have no problem with that. But I don't think it should be mandatory. And I think that patients just need to have choice in how they mm-hmm. want to be taken care of.
What do you think about price transparency? I know that the direct primary care doctors already do it. I mean, I have a version of that
absolutely.
In my practice.
Yes. I am completely for it. And not just price transparency, but also legislation transparency. I think it's important that all of it, that they're transparent across the board. But definitely, mm-hmm. I love offices and I promote offices. There's an urgent care actually not very far from us that has their prices listed on the website. And I every mm-hmm. time that somebody needs to go to an urgent care, I refer to there every chance I get.
It's about giving the power back to the patient and letting them be consumers instead of someone telling them, I know what's best for you. How could you know what's best
yes.
for me? You don't know me.
Right.
So from that standpoint,
well,
you know, this legislative mosh, and you don't know who's making the choices and what's their motivation and how are they tainted? That's the question I always ask myself.
Yes, the critical thinking of follow the money. And I remember
mm-hmm.
in residency when we were taught not to do anything to a patient. If they were of sound mind, you don't do anything to a patient that they do not want done because that's considered assault. And yet yep. we have a whole medical establishment, a whole government establishment that is forcing that very thing.
Agreed. I mean, you walk into a hospital, people are getting vaccines, they're getting all sorts of treatment that they don't even know. They're signing away their personal rights in some instances, and they don't even know because they're under duress. I had one patient, a Medicare patient, who refused to sign one of those documents, and it was a battle for him to get care because he was
yes.
savvy enough to read what he was signing. And we have to take that responsibility back throughout our
yes.
all sorts of places in our lives. Nobody knows what's best for you except you, really.
Yeah.
And you're not a child. Yes. And children can't consent. I mean, there's all sorts of things as parents and
right.
adults we really need to start paying attention to. I mean, just the fact, I read the vaccine issue is becoming another hot-button issue again because there's a law on that's winding its way. I think it started in Virginia, one of the Virginia representatives, that if you have a business and you have, you know, you give your employees access to health clubs and health maintenance sorts of things, that you can also penalize them if they don't take vaccines if you offer them as part of your health delivery in that business. That
wow.
to me is like, are you kidding me? Yeah.
Well, what are they going to do about the person who then gets Guillain-Barré or has some sort
Thank
of a horrible reaction to a vaccination? If you could tell me that every single vaccination is 100% safe for every single person, then I would be 100% behind,
mm-hmm.
you know, encouraging it, certainly not forcing it, but encouraging it. But you cannot tell me that every single vaccine is safe for every single person. And so who takes the liability whenever that patient is penalized and then they have a lifelong side effect from that?
That is an excellent point. And I think if the risk were really tagged to whoever is running the show, then all
Absolutely.
Of this stuff would stop. You know,
yes.
if the insurance companies were at risk for denying a service and the patient
mm-hmm.
had a bad outcome, they would stop denying the service. If the
Absolutely.
Electronic medical record system got dinged for any HIPAA violation instead of the doctor, they would make a
yes.
better system. right? We're the only ones holding risk throughout the entire healthcare delivery system, but we're only 7 cents of the healthcare dollar that's spent, but we own all of the risk. That doesn't make sense. We need to really unhook that.
Without physicians, there is no healthcare. So I think we need to realize that we have a very powerful voice. We need to unify. Every doctor is saying the same thing, and we need to unify, and we need to allow our voices to be heard. And I'll tell you, if the legislators are not going to hear it, then we need to get our voices to the American people. Because eventually, when they see the atrocities that are happening in the darkness, in the places that are hidden from the American people, when we shine that light on that and say, you know what, I can't get the lawmakers to listen, but Americans, you need to hear this, then we're going to be heard. And we just need to not give up, I think, and just really allow our voices to be heard.
I couldn't have said it better. And on that note, time flies, and I want to thank you so much for being a guest on my show. Is there any way that you write a blog? Is there any way that my listeners can reach you?
I am not writing a blog at this moment, but no, I'm on Facebook, I'm on some of the other social media, so if you keep Googling, I may end up doing a blog one of these days, I'm not sure. So.
Okay, good. Well, I'd love to have you come back and give us an update
on how
you're doing, hopefully after this repeal passes.
Absolutely.
And it's a pleasure. It's an honor to know you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me, and thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.